not a product, it's a technology.
It's an education challenge.
A regenerative suspension?
There will be a growing demand for industrial photovoltaics.
Pumped hydro.
Innovation in the financing space.
The high-speed train is in all our interests.
All political lines.
Australia is a solar paradise.
The market is moving much faster than that.
You've got something that's transformational.
Solar window in a can.
Beyond Zero. Global warming science, solutions and action.
Taking it to a do-it-yourself level.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Beyond Zero show. We're coming to you from the studios of 3CR Melbourne, syndicated around Australia on the Community Radio Network and podcast on the internet at 3cr.org.au. Both the BZE Community Show that you can catch on podcast and this one are also available on iTunes and Stitcher. So please subscribe and rate us to help others find the shows. My name is Natalie Bucknell and I'm joined today by my co-host Kira Rundle. Hi Kira.
Hey.
Now, technological solutions for emissions-free transport are rapidly approaching economic parity with fossil fuel transport, and gas-fired electricity can now be replaced with renewables. This has significant implications for the oil and gas industry, but let's not overlook there are other products that are ubiquitous throughout our societies and economies – plastics. A report launched at the World Economic Forum in 2016 by the Ellen MacArthur Foundation showed that there will be more plastics by weight in the ocean than fish by 2050. Isn't that just a stunning statistic? Further, the report also estimates that the global plastics industry will consume 20% of total oil production and 15% of the annual carbon budget. While this already seems like a lot of plastic and a lot of impact from plastics. Add to the equation the fact that China and other developing countries have recently started rejecting the recyclables from Western countries like Australia. And you can see that we are projected to have a massive plastics problem on our hands in the near future. Fortunately, our guest today may have a contributing solution to some of these problems. They have developed a chemical recycling technology that might unlock a plastic-neutral Australia while also providing circular economy opportunities. We're joined on the phone today by Dr. Len Humphreys, CEO of Licella Holdings and developer of the catalytic hydrothermal reactor, which we'll refer to as CATHTR. Hi, Len. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Helen. Natalie, how are you?
Really good. And we've got Kira here as well.
Oh, hi, Kira.
Hello.
Say hello, Kira. Hello, Natalie.
Firstly, Len, can you give us some background on Licella? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
You're pronouncing it perfectly. Most of it's Licella, but actually it's spelled Licella.
Okay. And what motivated you to develop this technology?
Well, I have a fossil background, so I'm actually a poacher turned gamekeeper. I was found in the late 90s. I was involved in oil field development and knew that the reserves and resources they were talking about weren't recoverable. Mm-hmm. And then also cognizant of the pollution that some of the misuse of these were taking. So I looked to develop a technology first that could take naturally occurring plastics, as you call them, which are polymers, which is like trees or grasses, and then convert that to a bio crude, a chemical that could be used in making modern plastics or one to two fuels. So I started off from the other point of view of making bio products.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were making it from residues. So
that's talking about developing polymers or plastics using non-fossil fuel basis.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And so how did that develop to the current CATHTR that we're talking about today?
Well, it's a great question. If you think about what nature does in a tree, it creates polymers or, chains of things joined together. So when a tree is hit by sunlight, it's like a solar concentrator and takes water and the CO2 in the air. It makes a tree or grasses, and these are just long chains. So what we do is we take those long chains and we convert them to smaller chains, which are liquids. And those liquids can be biochemicals, can be used. If you think about plastics, all plastics are is long chains, but they're man-made chains, whereas mm-hmm. tree is naturally occurring long chains. The plastics are man-made from fossil oil chains. So all we're doing is then unzipping those chains, those man-made chains, the same way that we can unzip the natural occurring chains. But in unzipping the man-made plastic chains means we can then take the chemicals that made those long plastics and we can reuse them. So it didn't take much of a jump for us to think about that.
Okay, so you've kind of given us a little bit of background in that answer about what's happening with a catalytic hydrothermal reactor. Can you go into a bit more detail about how that achieves that unzipping?
I can. So yes, the key word in there is hydro, which is water. You know, if you've got hydrothermal power, you've got hydro dams. So the key thing for us that helps to unzip these chains, either these man-made chains, these natural occurring chains, is water. You can say, well, how on earth does that happen? Well, you know, we take water for granted. It's actually a very interesting chemical. So water can exist as solid, ice, as we know it, liquid, water, or steam. But if you carry on from that phase, so from the solid to liquid to the vapor, you actually create a different phase, which is called supercritical, which is a higher temperature and pressure. And at that point, water actually changes character. So water is like a Jekyll and a Hyde. So at this fourth state of matter, you can call it, the supercritical state of water, it actually turns into quite an aggressive chemical. And at that point is where it starts to break the chain of naturally occurring polymers, but it can also then unzip the chain of plastic and form it, and then take those plastics back to the building blocks that it came from in a very controlled manner.
So would you be able to tell us a little bit more about the energy that's involved in being able to create this supercritical water state? Or I guess the energy involved in the entire process as well?
Well, the energy, if we're talking about the carbon life cycle analysis, then, you know, even you're doing naturally occurring polymers, obviously it's trapping, the tree is trapping CO2 from the air, so the life cycle analysis is very low. Talking about man-made polymers, then, you know, in modern engineering, you capture most of the energy you require and you recycle it. So most of the energy required to create the reaction is captured, taken back to the beginning. Mm-hmm. Plus, when you unzip these plastics into the building blocks that made them, some of the building blocks are actually gases. You can use those gases to also provide the energy into the process, so it's a closed loop.
Mm-hmm.
It's an exceptionally efficient process as well. If you take, you know, a ton of plastic, just the plastic part, if we include both the liquid and the gas, we can convert about 93% of that back to some usable gas that can drive the process of the liquid. It's exceptionally high efficiency because of how the water behaves.
Mm-hmm.
It helps to break the chain, but it also helps to moderate the reaction to the well. Make sure you get the highest possible recovery of those valuable things that we put into creating those plastics.
So give us a bit of, in a nutshell, what goes in and what comes out, Len? So you get...
Well, what goes in is ex-consumer. So let's start from the beginning. There are seven types of plastics. So most plastics are all in seven categories. When we look at a bottle, it has a number on it, anything from 1 to 7. Or any container has a number from 1 to 7. So there are seven types of plastics that we use as consumers. The most common type is group 1 and group 2, which to you and I, group 1 is Coca-Cola bottles, called PET, polyethylene terephthalate, but Coca-Cola bottles, the transparent bottles you get fizzy drinks in, or water, that's the group 1. Group 2 is your milk bottles, the cloudy things, the plastic milk bottles, which is called high-density polyethylene, and you go on and on. So the most two common ones that come up in society are the group 1, group 2, and then we move on to group 3 and 4, which is your carrier bags, your cling wrap, and your other things. So what we take in is all of that mixture. We don't discriminate. So we can take in all of the plastics that we consume, and the only ones we like to limit a bit are things like PVC. And there's a reason for that. There's a particular chemical in PVC that can cause contamination of the final product, so we do like to limit some of that PVC. But with the exception of that, we can mix all of your book bottles, your Coca-Cola bottles, carrier bags, your cling films, you walk around your supermarket, your pots, tubs and trays. We can put all of that in there, and when we can unzip those chains that form those plastics and form the building blocks from which they came.
And is that because all of those plastics are made up ultimately of the same building blocks?
They are. So they're made up of many of the same building blocks, but also the fact is that they're all, the commonality is they're all chains, and sometimes the building blocks are slightly different, but the fact they're all chains is what we can then simplify those chains, snip those chains apart using this supercritical water.
Mm. So you basically chop up all the plastics and put that into the reactor. You've got some kind of catalyst. What's the catalyst involved?
That's just a metal entrained in the reactor. What a catalyst does, it just helps the process along. So all a catalyst is doing is facilitating a process. Slight difference between us walking and we put some skates on and we go faster. So what's helping us go faster is those skates. So you could say skates, the catalyst, helping the process along.
So what sort of catalyst are you using in this instance?
It's just a metal. It's a simple metal that you find in most sort of stainless steels as well. I can't say specific what it is.
It's proprietary.
A bit of Kentucky Fried Chicken in there.
Okay. And you also add some heat and pressure. What sort of heat and pressure are we talking about?
We go up to, what you've got to get up to is where these chains start to say, I think I'd like to come apart now. I think you get to the point where the link starts to say, yes, I think I can start to part from my partner next to me. So you have to be in about the 380 degrees C range, 380, 400 degrees C.
Mm-hmm.
That's also the temperature at which the water changes character into the supercritical point and then controllably and efficiently helps those chains to come apart to produce a very efficient low-carbon footprint process so we can use these chemicals again.
And what sort of pressure were you talking?
It's quite high pressure to control this energetic thing called supercritical water. It's about 3,500 pounds per square inch.
So this is definitely happening in a contained environment.
It's in a contained reactor, correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and Lynn, what do you get out the other end? What's coming out of the reactor?
Well, you get all the chemicals that form these. Now, in the world of hydrocarbon chemicals, there are groups of chemicals. So you tend to create groups that are called like kerosene, which is the lighter fraction, and you get a naphtha fraction, which often that particular fraction is what makes ethylene. And you get a fraction that you can also make, you know, longer chains, can make some of the other polymers. So you get the building blocks obviously the chemistry and these building blocks are quite, you know, diverse and different. So you are just getting the diverse different building blocks out, for which you can either decide to make further chemicals or you can also decide on some of the lighter fractions to fly planes.
So, yeah, is that kind of comparable then to what we would refer to as crude oil?
No. Crude, this is refined. So what makes these plastics is a refined product. We're turning those plastics back to the refined product, not crude.
Okay, so then that can just be, as you said, then directly used in, say, a jet engine.
Yes.
Okay.
The lighter fraction could be directly used in the jet engine, correct.
Okay. And you also have some carbon dioxide as a byproduct?
You do, it's quite low. Because when you tend to unlock these chains, you can create some carbon dioxide, but it's not a great deal. It's quite a lot because of how the water actually moderates the unlocking of the chain.
Okay. So you've got that range of end products, they come out as a mix and you have to separate them all out. And as you've said, you can redirect them to fuel or to
more
plastic production.
More Coca-Cola bottles or more milk bottles. Yeah, correct.
Now, another thing that we found really interesting doing the research for this was the idea that not only could you put mixed plastics into the reactor, but it wasn't limited by having some degree of contaminant, such as paper and other natural products. So, yeah, can you tell us a little bit more about that and why that's not an issue?
Well, we started off from natural products. The first thing we did with the CAD HDR was to unlock the naturally occurring polymers that nature creates. So we understand how to unlock those polymers that nature creates. So when you look around yourself, you know, you look at a tree, you look at grasses, and you look at plants, basically they're made up of quite similar long chain building blocks. And so, you know, the energy of the sun was going to make them, you know, three ingredients: the sunlight, water, and then the photosynthesis then builds these long chains from the water and the carbon dioxide and other nutrients. So we learned how to unzip those natural occurring chains. So we don't really care if there's bits of paper in there or bits of tree or anything in there in the plastics, because the system doesn't see that as a tree, doesn't see it as a Coca-Cola bottle, doesn't see it as a milk bottle, doesn't see it as grasses. It just sees it as a chain, and then it helps to unlock that chain.
So what about other contaminants, such as if there was glass got in there, other things like that?
Well, glass is silica, so we can't do much with silica. So glass would just precipitate out the system, and we simply collect it.
Right. Listeners, if you've just joined us, we're talking to Dr. Len Humphreys about CAT HDR technologies for dealing with plastics. So, Len, Licella, through a joint venture with Armstrong Chemicals in the UK, is in the process of building the world's first commercial-scale hydrothermal upgrading plant for end-of-life plastics. So what has been the pathway to this? This isn't the first plant that you've built, is it?
No, we spent 10 years building the pilots right through the commercial pilot. So we have in operation at Somersby, which is just north of Sydney, a large commercial demonstration unit. And so all of the design and the work, we spent 10 years. Of course, we started off the journey by understanding how to unlock nature's plastics or polymers. And then we've been adding, how can we find a bridge to a lower carbon future by reusing the plastics we have? But the Wilton plant in the UK, northeast of England, with our partners, will be the first large-scale commercial for consumer plastics, or what they call end-of-life plastics, because you can only, even on plastics that you can recycle, which are commonly physically recycled, like your Coca-Cola bottle or your milk bottle, you can actually only physically recycle that a couple of times because the plastics break down.
Okay, and each subsequent use, it's in a more degraded form, is that right?
Correct, yeah. So until we've come up with what we now call chemical recycling, which is what the CAD HDR is, taking those long chain plastics back to simple building blocks, it meant that even with physical recycling of the Coca-Cola bottles and milk bottles, it came to a point where they just had to be disposed. And traditional disposing is burying it, which is criminal in my view, or burning it, which is almost equally criminal. Because it's gone. So, yes, the Wilton plant will be the first large-scale. So that will process 20,000 tonnes per year of end-of-life plastics. And then, you know, you can just add more units if you like. In fact, the Wilton plant is going to build three. So the complex will process 60,000 tonnes of end-of-life consumer plastic.
And, I mean, does that even make a dint on what would that be as a percentage of plastic waste being produced in the UK, Len? Do you have any idea?
It's a fairly small percentage, but, you know, we have to take that first step, you know, the first step to a long pathway. We can scale that. Obviously, we can make much bigger plants, but we're starting... Mm-hmm. We started to use the, equipment that's off the shelf, and equipment off the shelf and simple, because if the process is simple, it works, tends to lend itself to an initial, I stress initial, unit size of about 20,000 ton per annum.
And this is all Australian technology then, is it, Len?
Yes, it is.
It's a great homegrown success story.
I actually give some merit to the federal government. We've had about $10 million worth of support from government institutions like ARENA, mm-hmm. which is a government renewable energy group. And we've successfully competed for three projects that constitutes that $10 million. So we are the love child of the federal government, which we have to give them credit for. The disappointing thing is that after they gave us that initiation and growing up, the incentives to do this are much greater in Europe. So that's why we're doing it in Europe. However, as you saw maybe from recent announcements, we've just partnered with New Zealand's largest recycler of end-of-life paper, or end-of-life plastic, OG. And so we're now going to bring this and build it over here in our part of the world. And we're also pretty close to looking at partnerships within Australia to turn that large-scale demonstration system that we built at Somersby into a smaller-scale full-time commercial unit.
I
think we've got some good news coming out for Australia and New Zealand in the next 6 months as well.
Yeah, and we just saw an article in The Age this morning talking about how there's mixed recycling piling up in Melbourne warehouses that's unfortunately not being recycled at the moment. So there's certainly a need within Australia to have a plant like this up and running, hopefully very soon.
There's a massive need, because as you said at the beginning, we used to, the world, not just us, the world used to ship millions and millions of tons of post-consumer plastics to China. And when China said enough, you know, our embarrassment became obvious. That's why the piling up around the world, not just in Victoria, around the world, because we ourselves never took the responsibility to responsibly recycle materials which are very capable of being recycled. They're not waste, they're a resource. We just have to recognize them as that, and then put the infrastructure in place. Because, you know, it actually is a net gain. You know, we recycling these plastics is a net gain for society. We're reusing that, and, you know, we can have our own fuel from that if we choose to make fuel, or we can have our own new plastics and milk bottles and Coca-Cola bottles. That's what we choose to do, but it gives us that choice locally.
So is that, I mean, obviously that's driven largely by economic factors, and does the price of crude impact on the economics of recycling to get those same products, Len?
Obviously, it has an impact, but, you know, because of our efficiency of process, we can convert these plastics back to oil, even at quite a low oil price, significantly below where it is today. I think, you know, oil has to be down towards $30. $35 in the economics that we have available today before it said, well, economically, it doesn't count. But then you've got to factor in socially and also environmentally. So even down there, you still might have a very good pressing reason why you should be doing it.
Absolutely. And it's becoming more pressing by the day, isn't it? So what sort of cost is it per tonne of plastic waste to process with a Cat HDR?
Well, we can process it through the large-scale unit that we talked about in the UK. We can do it for around $25 a barrel. So that's our UK sort of scale break-even price. So we can put, you know, so around economic-wise, just talking pure economics, that's part of the social responsible and the environment. For now, for pure economics, we can make it work around $25 a barrel.
Okay, and how does it compare with pyrolysis in terms of yields?
We're about double the yield.
Okay, yeah, that's very significant, isn't it? And are there any downsides to this technology, Len?
Downsides?
Does does not compute.
I wish I could do it without heating it up, but I can't. So the downside is we have to put a bit of energy in, but we try and recover that.
And how are you planning to generate that energy?
A lot of it comes from the products that we produce. As I said, when we unzip the building blocks of the plastics, we produce liquids and gases. So we use the gases substantially to drive the energy of the process via either a boiler. We can also use the gases in a gas reciprocating engine should we need electrical energy. So we can actually almost do a closed loop energy system.
Yeah, and I think that closing that loop is also something that we talked about in the intro as well, that this was a way that not only is your process almost a closed loop system, but it's a way to close that loop also within the plastics economy as well.
Yeah.
And it's preventing emissions of greenhouse gases from plastics just breaking down in the environment as well.
The other really interesting thing is, which I'm sure your listeners would be intrigued at, is since the intervention of plastics, let's say 45, 50 years ago, we buried them. So what we've created is an oil field. So why wouldn't we go back and harvest those landfills?
Yeah, they're very accessible, aren't they?
So we've got 50 years of energy in the ground that we can even go back and do, which will then really, really help us such that we don't need to recover fresh fossil oil. We have a massive resource in the ground in old landfills that we could harvest.
That's a great note to finish on, Len. So thank you very much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you for asking me. I appreciate it.
Where can listeners find out more?
They can go to our website, lycella.com.
Okay, that's nice and straightforward. LICELLA.com. Listeners?
Correct.
Okay, thanks very much, Len.
Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye.
We've been speaking to Dr. Len Humphreys from Licella Holdings. The Beyond Zero show is brought to you by the climate change solutions think tank Beyond Zero Emissions and is recorded in the studios of 3CR Melbourne and syndicated around Australia on the Community Radio Network. Previous episodes of the show are available on iTunes and Stitcher. Please subscribe and help others find the show. If you enjoy the program and can donate to help cover airtime costs and keep us on the air, please go to the BZE website and click on the donate button. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to you joining us again next week.
It's not a product, it's a technology.
It's an education challenge.
A regenerative suspension.
There will be a growing demand for industrial photovoltaics.
It's morning, you're checking on me. You're restless, your pictures are speaking. The silence of nighttime doesn't love you like the rest of us. You're enraged, you're lonely. The clouds are dissolving above us. Insistence, there's meaning for the worst. You warned us with a shrill voice. There's an eye behind the killers. They're in control. You're serious.